The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. It's Friday again. Seems like yesterday was Monday, and that was it. Zoom. Too fast. It's just a blur. Admiral Cooper is sitting by in his captain's chair somewhere in central Florida, trying to stay out of trouble, keeping away from his meth dealer neighbors and not growing his own pot anymore. It's all right. It's all right. It's okay. Everybody's growing their own pot now. Not a problem.
Not me.
I know.
Not me. Not me.
Now,
he was back in business again this morning.
Really?
Yeah. One of his customers had his truck break down in front of his house at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's a fun place.
Drive-up service, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But this time, the guy drove up, and I don't know why it shut it off. And then, battery's dead.
And you didn't run right out there and offer to jumpstart him? Come on.
You are correct. I did not. I figure, too bad. He had two more car batteries in the back seat of his car, and they were all dead. He was trying to jump from one to the other. They were all dead.
Like his brain.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. My daughter has a master's in psychology, and she said that when people get so strung out on drugs, their brain rewires, and it becomes like, you know, ice cream or milk or whatever to a normal person. I got to say ice cream because I just had a big bowl of ice cream.
You're too funny. You're amazing. Harry, I don't know. You have as much as you want.
I used that phone number. We don't need to go into details. I used that phone number he gave me, and really nice. Happy to hear from you again.
God, now I'm drawing a blank.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it off air.
All right. We're going to tonight spend a little time on an absolutely fascinating subject, a subject that drove yours truly to collect many, many, many photos, historic photos, old photos. Some of them, I will admit, may well be photoshopped, but not all of them. And I also was able to find two 16-millimeter black and white film clips showing German flying discs. Flying. One was an obvious test flight. The other one was a disc running down a big runway, photographed from above and behind, probably by a chase plane of some kind. Fascinating, just absolutely fascinating. And the whole issue of German flying, you want to call them saucers, go ahead, flying discs, is something that most people don't know about. They couldn't believe, and if you did sit them down and tell them about it, they just say you're crazy. No way. Well,
that's because yes, they're programmed to say you're crazy.
That's right. That's right. Maria Orsic, or Orsic. It's spelled in a number of different ways.
Right.
Born 1895 in Zagreb, which I believe is Yugoslavia, isn't it?
Right.
It's quite a story. Her name is spelled in Yugoslav Orsic, and then it's English Ortish, or Orsic, or Orsic. There's quite a few different spellings of it. She's a she's a calendar girl, but very innocent, kind looking. Not a saucy type.
Beautiful, not a flashy broad.
No, beautiful Nordic appearance, eyes. There's another one that is often mentioned with her, who goes by the name, or went by the name, of Sigrun, S-I-G-R-U-N, which is a rather Wagnerian name, but it's another Nordic name. They were supposedly involved with the Vril Society, V-R-I-L. What is the Vril Society? It's a remarkable footnote in history that is huge, but gets no attention to speak of. The Vril Society was formed by a group of, now get this, women psychic mediums led by the T-H-U-L-E, and I can't
Thule,
say
that. Thule.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm looking at the second word here. Gesellschaft. Okay, Thule Gesellschaft. Medium.
Gesellschaft is a German word, basically means association, organization, something like
right.
that.
All right. Headed by Maria Orsic of Zagreb, who have been, at the time, receiving communication from Aryan aliens living on the near the Alpha Centauri area of the Aldebaran system. Allegedly, these aliens had visited Earth and settled in Sumeria, and the word Vril was formed from the ancient Sumerian word V-R-I-I-L, like godlike, viril. A second medium was known only as Sigrun, a name etymologically related to Sigrun of Valkyrie and one of Wotan's nine daughters in that Norse legend, which was put to music by Richard Wagner, the Ring Cycle, a monumental achievement by any measure.
Yeah, so, incredible music.
Oh, well, overwhelming. So that's the Vril Society. Now, apparently, the information that Maria was getting was in great detail. She would write it down, and it was instructions on how to build ships, as in spaceships, as in flying saucers, as in flying discs. And in the early 1930s, she began with these women and their group, the Vril group, to build flying discs. Well, it wasn't long, practically simultaneously, that the SS found out about that, right?
Yep.
And got on the bandwagon, too. In late 1924, she visited Rudolf Hess in his apartment in Munich, together with Rudolf von Subotendorf, the founder of the Thule Stuhl.
Thule
Society, yes, we'll leave the second word there. Wanted to contact Dietrich Eckhart, who had died 1 year before. Eckhart had translated Henrik Ibsen's plays into German and had published the magazine, blah, 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 He had also been a member of the Thule Society. Is it Thule? Is that?
Yeah. It's pronounced, I mean, Thule.
That's the way I've always heard it, but some people insist it's otherwise. But they always go to you.
All the Germans I ever talked to refer to it as the Thule Society or Thule Gesellschaft.
Perfect. To establish contact with Eckhart, Sabatendorf, and other Thulists, among them Ernst Schultz Strathaus, joined hands around a black draped table. Hess found unnerving to watch Maria Orsic's eyeballs rolling back and showing only the whites of her eyes, and to see her slumping backward in her chair, mouth agape. However, Sabatendorf smiled in satisfaction as the voice of Eckhart started coming out of Maria Orsic's mouth. Eckhart announced that he was obliged to let someone else's voice come through. This is the voice. Eckhart's voice is coming through, but he said he was obliged to let somebody else talk to use Maria Orsic's vocal cords, all right, with an important message. A weird voice then identified itself as the SUMI, Sumi, dwellers of a distant world which orbits the star Aldebaran in the constellation which you call Taurus the Bull. Hess and Schulte Strathaus blinked at each other in surprise. According to the voice, the second voice, the Sumi, S-U-M-I, were a humanoid race who had briefly colonized Earth 500 million years ago. The ruins of ancient Larsa and Nippur in Iraq had been built by them. Those of them who survived the Great Flood, I'm moving ahead here just a little bit, the deluge of Noah's Ark, had become the ancestors of the Aryan race. So Bettendorf remained skeptical and asked for proof. While Maria was still in a trance, she scribbled several lines of queer-looking marks on a piece of paper. Those marks turned out to be ancient Sumerian characters, the language of the founders of the oldest Babylonian culture. The writings may have been enough evidence to convince Sabatendorf, but would probably have not been enough to sway most Columbus, Ohio criminal lawyers who could call it circumstantial at best. All right. So we're talking about channeling here, obviously. Channeling is a circular flight machine. In December 1919, a small group of persons from Thule, Vril, and something else, Men of the Black Stone, and you've seen the Black Stone, you know what that is. That's pretty wild. 12-pointed black sun, or whatever it is.
Right. The Sonnen Rod.
I would like that embedded in my floor. That's quite a scene.
Well, there is one like that embedded at Beaverburg Castle that we saw.
Yeah, I want that. Can you get that for me?
I think you'd have to take the whole floor.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, they rented a small forester's lodge in the vicinity of Berchtesgaden, Germany, where they met, accompanied by Maria Orsic and another medium who is only known as Sigrun. Aldebaran. The solar system of Aldebaran is 68 light years from Earth, and two inhabited planets, which constitute the realm of Sumeran, orbit their sun. The inhabitants of this solar system are subdivided into masters, white godlike people, Aryans, and other different human races. These latter races develop because of climatic changes on the individual planets, the two of them, and were the result of a degeneration of the godlike people. These mutants came to have a spiritual development inferior to the godlike people themselves. The more the races mixed together, the more their spiritual development was degraded. Consequently, when the sun, Aldebaran, began to expand, they were no longer able to make interplanetary voyages like their ancestors. It had become impossible for them to leave their planets. Thus, the inferior races, totally dependent on the masters, came to be evacuated in spaceships and taken to other habitable planets. In spite of the differences, there was respect between the two races. They did not encroach upon each other's living space, in contrast to those of us on Earth. Okay, all this is available online. I'm not going to go on any longer with it, but you get the idea. Maria Orsic and Sigrun apparently came from or were in direct contact with the inhabitants of the planets around the sun, the star Aldebaran. They got the information on how to build these craft, allegedly, through Maria Orsic's channeling. Now, in the 30s, the SS found out about all this because they were actually building them and apparently flying them. So the SS demanded the technology and began their own line of flying discs. Okay? So you got two. There's the Maria Orsic's group is building them, and the SS is building them. So most of the pictures we have are of the SS version. Now, interestingly enough, at the end of the war, Maria Orsic and Sigrun, I believe both of them, but at least Maria Orsic, disappeared. And Maria disappeared in 1945, the 11th of March, 1945. An internal document of the Vril Gesellschaft was sent to all its members. It was a letter written by Maria. The letter ends, and it's in German. Niemand bleibt, H-I-E-R. Anyway, three words. Okay. The letter ends. The
Niemand
idea.
Bleibt. Is that a Niemand bleibt hier?
Correct.
No one lives here.
Okay, no one lives here. That was the last announcement ever from the Vril Society. It is speculated they departed and went back to Aldebaran. Leslie Elwood Brooks says, Orsic's daughter is probably Yolanda Raffa, R-A-F-F-A, her married name. Maria Orsic... period. I don't know what that's for. Her father was from Zagreb and her mother was from Vienna. So was the mother of her patron, Franziska Romana Oettingen. Oettingen. There may have been family connections. At least there probably were in Vienna. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. The point is...
blah, blah, blah.
I can't, it's too much for me, the German, it's hard. So Maria Orsic disappeared in March, and as we all know, the war ended in April. So she left, and they all left. They were never, Sigrun, they're gone. They were never seen again. Gone. So where did they go? They may have gone back to Aldebaran. And there's a picture of what would look like, I think, a wormhole.
Yeah, the wormhole, that's photo number 62 on your array.
Yeah, we got it. So we'll get that. Okay, so that's the story. I just wanted to do a little intro about Maria Orsic and the Vril Society and where this flying disc technology allegedly originated, picked up by the SS, which had their own combat craft. And many of you will say, and I've heard this before, well, if the Germans had these flying discs with... what, 30 millimeter, whatever's on, they had guns on them. Why
ones I've seen here, the pictures up on your array, they do appear to be 30 millimeter.
Yeah. Okay. My guess, I got lucky. So why didn't Hitler use them? Because if one of them had been shot down, the secret would have been out. Very simple. You just can't let that kind of technology fall into enemy hands. It's too dangerous. So, same reason he didn't use the atomic bombs he allegedly had. He thought that the Americans would have just nuked Germany from border to border. So he didn't use them. But they were supposedly found in parked railway cars in Czechoslovakia at the end of hostilities. These were small. We'd call them tactical nukes today. But it is thought that Hitler had nukes. But he didn't use them. He certainly didn't use gas because of his experiences in World War I And he was threatened that forget nukes, but the gas would be spread all over Germany, and all of Germany would be killed. So he wouldn't do that. Okay, so there we go. Anything you want to add to that long diatribe? But I hope it was interesting for you out there, because most people know nothing about this.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And, excuse me, Clark McClellan, in his book that we offer, Space, the Final Frontier, Secrets NASA Doesn't Want You to Know, he goes into quite a bit there about Maria Orsic, but especially Aldebaran. He firmly believes that that was the cradle of our civilization. And as he put in conversations with me and also put in the book, there's not one human race. There are 5 or 6 different human races.
Humanoids.
And he feels that they came from maybe different parts of the Aldebaran system.
Could be.
Which is Clark maybe why.
One of the last things Clark said to me, he said, remember, Aldebaran. That's what he said.
Stand by one. What? Okay, thank you. I've just been told that there's a big protest going on in Brooklyn, New York about the Rittenhouse verdict. Okay,
well,
sorry about the interruption.
If Rittenhouse had shot a couple of Negroes, there would be buildings burning now, but he killed 2 white people, so it's kind of hard for Black Lives Matter to get too terribly worked up about this.
They're
and
still
whatever.
Claiming he was, still claiming he was a white supremacist. He shot 2 white guys, so what the heck?
It's so asinine, all of it. I can't.
But anyhow, Clark feels that, which is in the book,
Is that the book? That's the same book I sent you. Remember?
Yes, I remember. He focuses quite heavily on Aldebaran, and
yes, he
believes that we, the Earth, are a nursery, like a tree nursery, growing different races, different human races. And
5
Yeah, in a book he says 5, sometimes he says, or maybe 6. And the flying saucers or UFOs, which is a term you can't use in NASA, it's IFA, in-flight anomaly, is what you can say.
Now they call them UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena.
Oh, okay.
Leave it alone. UFO is fine.
Yeah. No, they got to keep changing things. And you remember Operation Blue Book, or Project Blue Book, back in the 50s and 60s. It started right around the time I went into the Air Force. Anybody who saw a UFO and reported it got a visit from 2 Air Force guys. One was an officer, usually a captain, and the other was a staff sergeant, usually. And they came to allegedly take down all the information, but then to tell the person what they really saw was a runaway weather balloon. We had more damn runaway weather balloons. That's Clark's philosophy, too. And he goes on to it. Goes a little bit into Maria Orsic, but he goes heavily into Aldebaran being the cradle of Earth's civilization.
Well, I'm really proud of the way you edited that book and saved it.
Clark
used to come on, and we used to try and sell one chapter at a time as he would finish them, and Clark was not a polished writer, okay?
He's an man of...
He was a man of experience.
I had to read that book word for word 4 different times to get it to read a little more smoothly than it was. And as I said, almost every paragraph was different format than the paragraph before. And sometimes inside each paragraph, he would change formatting, change font sizes. I'm getting a headache over it.
Well,
but
he had a wonderful lady who helped him trying to pull the book together, and I don't want to name her on the radio, but I'm very grateful to her for her kindness and friendship, and giving me the copy that he wanted me to have, and she made it happen. So and then we got it to you, and you saved it, and you deserve all the credit.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, now what we're going to do, go ahead.
A friend of Dick Allgaier's, Daz, I can't remember, Smith, Daz Smith, he designed the front cover. One hell of a sharp design. And Dick Allgaier helped with the book, too, and you're helping greatly. And this is, I haven't crunched the numbers yet, but I think we're close to being a bestseller on that one now because it's selling very well. Good. And this is history that needs to be brought out.
Of course. Absolutely. Okay. Now, let's just skip this first break. I want to make sure we get through this. When you go to guests, look under Harry's name, click on that link. It'll take you to the photos, and it brings up a really nice page that my webmaster made. It's a gallery, and each thumbnail will click into a larger version. Now, the top is a video. Don't look at that until we're done. I want you to look at that. I put that together. That was a lot of work several years ago. But it's really compelling. And I believe it to be 90%+ legit, as I do most all these photos. So we're going to.
And if you look at that one, you'll see those two guns up on top. Those would be 30 millimeters.
There you go. Okay. Is that a Photoshop picture, friends? Is that real? I would bet, I'd bet the farm it's real. So that's what they were doing.
We've seen too many photos like this to think that they'd all be Photoshopped. Also in one of my books, I forget which one, it's When Eagles Soared. We have three volumes of that, and in one of them, one of the chapters is the memories of a German Luftwaffe soldier, and he discusses how one came and landed at his airstrip.
Sure, sure. No doubt, no doubt in my mind at all. Okay, so after we get through this, look at the video. I think you'll like it. Pass it around. It's a pretty good compilation of all the available photos that I could find. It took a long time, but they're there. So let's go ahead and look at the first photo and the first line and click on that and it'll get larger. And you say, it's blurry. Well, okay. Well, this is like 1938, maybe something like that. The video version of this is more clear than the freeze frame, which we took out of it. So what you see there is a disc flying directly away from your vantage point. There's a chase plane behind it, and there is a, I believe, an Iron Cross on the side of the craft down low. But could this be done with Photoshop? Of course. But that's not the point. The point is the number of these photos. Extraordinary. That is taken from a black and white piece of film. And we had two of these pieces of film showing flying German discs. So there's one, just to give you an idea of what you'll see in the video. All right. Number two is an extreme close-up of that very disc. It's a little blurry, so forgive that, but you can get a very good idea of
could be
the
blurry
sun.
Because it's moving.
It is moving.
Yeah, and you didn't have the shutter speed and the high speed film back in them days.
No, it wasn't 30 frames a second.
No. And back in those days, you didn't have digital cameras. You had photos with film.
That's right. So there's a close-up of it. All right. The next one, picture number three, is apparently... My guess is it's a bottom of one of the craft.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Upside down, I don't know.
Maybe it crashed.
Could be flipped over. Yeah, I just don't know. But it does appear to be mechanisms on display out the bottom.
Mm-hmm. The nearest wheels, landing gear.
Could be. The nearest side on the right, lower right, looks to me almost like damage in there. It's different than all the rest of the marks, so it might have landed and flipped. We don't know. So there you go. Number four. Oh, I like this particular image. This is a good one. This is a classic early disc, and I don't know if it's the SS version, Harry, or one of the Vril versions. I don't know. But there's an old car there parked on the side of the road, and they're watching. They're watching this disc come in, and you can see the it looked like the Bavarian Mountains behind there somewhere in Germany. I don't know where, but lots of pine trees and a big shadow underneath. Yes, I know you can add a shadow with Photoshop. I know that.
Maybe but other people can. I'm too dumb to learn that stuff.
Well, you got to get to some point where you say, my God, there are dozens of pictures here.
Yeah,
how
too many
does
it
for take?
It to be fake.
All you need is one that's real, okay? Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. One changes the game. And I'm sure there are a hell of a lot more than one good picture here. These pictures mm-hmm. are remarkable. Remarkable. Okay, number five. Now, maybe you can read that. That's supposed to be around April 45. That was the guess of the person who put that text on the picture. You can see how the outer edge of the circumference around the disc is angled up slightly.
It's yeah, it looks like almost like the wing of a B-47 that comes up in, when it gets into flight. I'm not saying that's what it is, but that's what it looks like. It says those photos are not secured. I don't know what X height is, but these are photos unsecured, unsecret.
We should also mention some of the people involved with the early design and operation of these discs. I'll get to their names a little later. They won't mean much to anybody, but there were some really... Victor Schauberger is one of the giants. And Victor
Schauberger, that's a big name, the electron genius. Electron Jesus, they called him.
He knew how to use the resonant or resident energy of the planet Earth to cause these craft to levitate and to fly. And I'm going to keep it right there because I'm not a physicist. I don't know more than that. But Schauberger was a giant. If you want to look him up, there is material about him there. And he did explain in one paper that I saw how these craft flew. So there's one. And the other one was the guy that was supposedly dead at the end of the war. Clark knew him. You know who I mean. Doggone it. Anyway.
Well, Clark knew a lot of the scientists out there at
KSC. He knew all of them. He knew all of them. And they liked him, see, and that's another reason he got into trouble, I'm pretty sure, because he was very close friends with the Germans. They respected him.
Right. He got too close, and they told him more than he needed to know, I guess, and he wasn't too shy about passing on what he learned.
Right. Okay.
And something about a secret clearance where they get nervous if you start telling too much.
Just a little. Picture number 6 of 68. Interesting. Yes, that could be Photoshop, but it doesn't necessarily have to be Photoshopped. It's a group of four officers. Looks like one of them is from a non-German military, huh?
The guy on the you right? picked up on that, too. Second guy in from the right. Looks Italian or Czech. The hat gives it away there because I don't remember seeing the Germans wear hats like that.
No. Some of the U-boat crew did, I think, didn't they? Have hats like that?
Not the Germans, no. They had either their Donald Duck hat or just a cap when they were working.
The cap. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
If you look closely at this photo in the far right side, it almost appears like there's an ME-109 sitting there.
That's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. And remember, most airfields and or a lot of the airfields during the war were just leveled grass meadows. That's what they
right.
were. They weren't polished concrete. So number six, is it real or is it Photoshop? Kind of, it's a tough call. All right. Number seven. Now, this is a really intriguing picture. If you look at it carefully, there's a ground maintenance guy, and he's reaching up, and he's grabbing that upturned lip on the edge. So you take the whole circumference all the way around, and it was tipped up a little bit. There was obviously an aerodynamic reason for that, and you'll see there's a truck, part of a truck visible underneath and behind it. Difficult to make it out, but I think you'll see in the video that these images are actually a little bit more clear in some cases. That's mm-hmm. That's an interesting picture.
Up on top, you can see what appears to be the 30 millimeter twin mount.
Yeah. The next one is number eight. And this one has been roundly condemned as being a fake. But I don't think it is. I think it's real. I think it's an enormous craft. Remember, there were drawings found after the war of all of these basic different types. They called them Hanabu, Hanabu 1, Hanabu 2. And this is one of the latter ones. And there's the twin 30s up on top again. It's a big piece of machinery.
Yeah.
Look at the truck underneath it on the right side. It's small. I'll give you an idea.
And yeah, these things must have weighed quite a bit.
Yeah, the outer edge on this one is arched downward, not tipped up at the end. So they did vary the designs on these. There were a number of them. And if you look up H-A-N-N-E... B-U, Hanabu, you'll see drawings. They should still be online. I don't think they've scrubbed them all off yet. Okay, number nine. I'll let Harry describe this one, number nine.
You're looking at one of these
second,
larger versions.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, larger
second
version
row.
Of Hanabu.
Just like the one we just saw.
Right.
It's only
with the landing gear folded up, obviously, and two chase planes. I'm having trouble figuring out what kind of chase planes those are. They don't look like they're definitely not Focke Wulf FW-190s, and I'd say they were Messerschmitt 109s either.
No, they're not 109s. Don't know. Whatever they were evil Nazi craft.
Yeah.
Just remember that.
Yes. Make sure you don't look at the swastika. Your brain will melt.
Okay. The next one, a very interesting picture, number 10. Now, I want you again to look at the outer edge, the circumference of it, how it wraps around, and it does appear to undulate as it makes its way in a 360-degree radius or all the way around. It's interesting.
Right, and some parts it's tipping up, and in some parts it's tipping down.
Right.
Right. If you look at rotor blades on a helicopter, if I remember correctly, they change their aspect as they go through the circle of rotation.
I believe you're right. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I had a buddy who was a crew chief on a Huey with the 82nd Airborne, and he showed me how, and I've read up on it, too, that I think the blades provide more lift at the forward part rather than at the backward part of the circle. I'm definitely not an expert on that, and I'm winging it from memory, but it's maybe these things are flexible and change their angle of attack, as it's called.
Could be. Could be easily. Number 11, that is a 109, I believe, on the right, is it not, coming in? Looks more like a 109 than the other one.
Yeah.
And you see the Iron Cross insignia on the side of the We'll call it the crew compartment up top, observation.
Right. I think it's called the Balkenkreuz, the Balkan cross.
I knew that.
Balkenkreuz. With my limited German.
No, you're doing well. Okay.
I can get along okay in the little towns in Argentina with my German. If we ever get to go there again.
That's not a joke either. Things are not looking good there. Picture number 12 out of 68, you'll see another chase plane flying either over or between the craft and us, which is probably the orientation here.
It says it's a P-51, so that would be an American plane.
No, there's an Iron Cross on the side, on the bottom of the wings. Picture number 12.
I'm looking at number 12.
Look at the bottom of the wings of the aircraft. There's crosses there.
I wonder if all I'm seeing is that you've got words across the bottom of it. Gigantic German Fu craft hunted by P-51.
All right, I'm looking at the wrong picture.
I'm looking at number 12.
All right, I'm not going to. There's mislabeling here. It says Nazi UFOs number 11 in the middle. On the left side, it says image 12 of 68. So I don't know which one you're looking at.
I'm looking at the ones with your numbers on them.
Are you looking at the middle number? You're looking at the middle number?
Oh, now I'm on. Oh, okay. Now I see where the problem is. Underneath the picture, it says Nazi UFOs 12, but over on the left side, it says image 13.
Correct.
Of 68. So let's look at the other one.
Okay.
Yeah, 12 of 68. Yeah, that's definitely a 109.
Yeah, now number 13 of 68, I don't see that as a P-51. I see that as another 109.
I don't know. Look closely. You can see a little bulge under the belly, which would be the supercharger housing.
I do see that. Well, whatever. Okay. And if it says, what does it say under it?
May 11th. German Fu craft hunted by P-51. Fu fighters is what everybody called them because they didn't know what it was.
Well, this
ball
would have
lightning.
Been May 11th, a couple of weeks after the end of fighting. So this craft was trying to get away and chased by a 51. That would have been quite a prize to shoot that down. Of course, we would never have heard anything about it.
No.
Okay.
That's
so we
all
got
secret stuff.
Yeah, two sets of numbers. On the left is one number. It's one digit higher. The center is one digit lower. Just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm so confused. Oh, no, that's what Barbarino used to say on Welcome Back, Cotter. I'm so confused.
Well, you need more ice cream.
I know.
Okay, the next
My
picture
son
is
yells
just
at me that I'm taking his ice cream because he's into the ice cream more than I am.
Is he? All right. The next one, number 13 in the middle, 14 on the left, is the same picture, just an enlargement.
Yeah, a little closer.
Yeah.
But there's another aircraft taking the photo because the 51 is at the upper right-hand corner.
Yep. What flavor ice cream did you have, by the way?
Vanilla with chocolate sauce, mounds of whipped cream, and a little bit of strawberry sauce on top.
You're going all the way out, at marching to your own cadence. I really respect that.
Yeah, I'm seeing my doctor on this Monday at 0800, and I know he's going to try to introduce me to a needle with insulin. I'm going to have to tell him he ain't no way I'm going to take a needle. I'd have made a lousy druggie because I can't stand needles.
No needles. Nah.
No.
All right. Picture number 15 on the left. What does this say here? Can you read it? Two discs, two German discs. And if you notice, these are later models because underneath the disc part, you'll see a bulge on the left and a bulge on the right.
Yeah, two smaller ones.
Yes, those are classic George Adamski style craft. And I think they carried, forward with that very design. When Adamski's craft were photographed, there's actually a third small little bulge, but you can't see it. It's on the opposite side of the bigger bulge in the center. So there's three of these round, they're like little globes.
Yeah, right. The one in the middle is about two or three times the size of either of the outer ones.
Yeah.
And if you look closely at the left-hand image, you can see a little bit of a bulge under that, too.
Yep. Yep.
I'm lost. I can translate one or two words. And type, that's all I can got. After the word form, und type is and the type.
Very good. Good enough. Okay, next picture is an enlargement of the closer craft, and you can see some remarkable detail on it. This would have been end of the war, or very shortly before the end of the war. They had it. They had the tech. They had it. Look at these things.
Yeah, remarkable. That one, you can see the bulges underneath clearly.
Yep.
And also the other one off to the left, you can see a little more of the bulge.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, next line. First picture. Different design craft. See? Look at the difference. No bulges on the bottom. And again,
and
if you look up...
Much sleeker.
Very much so. This, I would hazard a guess this would be a later model.
Could be, or a different type. The earlier ones, you know, looked like they had a very large compartment, you know, for room inside to do whatever. Maybe that's a bomber design, and the one you're looking at now is a fighter design. I'm just spitballing. I don't know. Just a thought.
Good guesses. Okay. The second picture is purportedly the inside of one of these ships. So make of it what you will.
Interesting. That would be the inside of one of the ones we saw two or three photos ago, I guess, because it's a taller vertical structure.
Correct.
Just a guess.
But that's all I know about that one. Probably people listening know more about these things than I do in some regards.
Well, right. Yeah, that would be nice. Let me say, send me an email, sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com. Tell me what you think we're looking at here.
All right, number 19 on the left. 18 in the middle. We got an act here. We'll take it on the road. I'll say 19, you say 18. I'll say 20, you say 19.
Who's on first?
Thundering applause. All right, this is a bit of a blur because the craft is moving quickly, and it was snapped by something, maybe somebody in another plane, and it is a little distorted, but you get
the
idea. And when you see it in the video, it's even more remarkable. Okay. Continue our look at German flying discs made in the 30s and 40s. This next one, if you look, the protrusions underneath, there you can see two of them. There's a third on the other side, I will bet, but they're not round little globe-like shapes. Remember the Adamski shape was a round globe? These have a flat surface on the top. They come out, they're just different shapes.
Mm-hmm. Different model, different design.
Yeah. Hanabu. All right, next up.
That's
number 21.
1 or 20.
And that's a pretty nasty-looking rotatable 30 cal on the bottom.
That one is big enough, I think it would be a 3.7 or 37 millimeter.
Those
are anti-tank guns. The 37 millimeter is 3.7 centimeter, they called it. We called them 37 millimeter. You can see on the upper left part, you would have the 30 millimeter, but down this bottom, it's a very long, it appears to have a flash suppressor on the muzzle.
Yeah. It's an anti-tank gun. You got it.
Yeah, and it looks like it would not be remotely operated. It looks like it's got a little housing for maybe a man in there, like the ball turd in a B-29.
Good call. Good call. These were some large craft.
Mm.
They weren't teeny tiny. Okay. Next up. Same ship or same type of ship, and you get a better look at the gun on this one, on the bottom.
Right.
It's the actual angle of the barrel, you can see, has changed.
Right, as if maybe it's pointing at something.
Yep.
Who are we going to shoot here?
Next one, real quick.
If he's got a big gun, he's a white supremacist.
Oh, racism all the way.
yeah.
This number 23 on the left, number 22 in the middle is a very sharp close-up of the gun, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Okay, and what's the next one? Ah, the next one, number 24 on the left, 23 in the middle, has the gun, but it's we'll call it retracted, Harry. It's up. The barrel.
Okay.
See it? It's up.
Right. It's, but yes, tilted up. And the big dark spot on the end of it, I think, is the flash suppressor.
Yeah, very good. All right. Hold on a minute. And if you want, why don't you do this? During the break, go ahead and start the video and take a look at that. I think you'll enjoy it. It's got music. And it has both videos are in there of the old 16 millimeter film, so it's excellent. All right, we'll be right back. Hold on.